program that downloads my audio to the right directory on the, whatever directory I want on the server. And based on you know, doing a regular expression lookup at my file for the audio, it has some, you know, has the date and the time in there, so it looks for the time. And if the time is at 11, it puts it in the digital control, and if it's 9, it puts it in electronics. But then, you know, I made this program and all, and I was testing on the digital control directory. And so then I just, once I kind of got it working, I started using it, but I forgot to change the digital control directory on the 9 o'clock ones to be the 9 o'clock directory. Yeah, I just didn't set the preference on the phone to the right directory. The last bug, maybe. You know. Anyway. Well, today what we want to do is we want to start into chapter 7. And the first thing I want to do is just kind of, you know, remind ourselves what we had done a little bit before, you know, in our discretization way of doing things, you know, how C2D works, especially the zero-order hold. And then I'd like to look at a little bit what happens, what do the state equations look like in discrete time, and then I'd like to actually try and place the poles on some continuous system using a digital controller, okay, using the state feedback method, assuming we can get at each of the states and see if it works. And so anyway, we'll see how far we get. Let's first of all just go look at what we've done before, because that actually has a lot of bearing on what we're going to do. And I need to kind of change my notation to, well, actually, I didn't really use any notation here. But we want to take this equation here from whatever day this was. This was April 17. We want to take that guy and we want to put it in the notation of the book. They also do this in the book in chapter 7. If you look in chapter 7, I can show you where they do this business we did here. They do that in the book as well. So, what is that, from April 18? Is it 17? What was that? So, from... Okay, what was this? It says April 17. We had this thing, this was the discretized state equation equals e to the a t x of k plus the integral. Well, actually, we can get rid of the integral. I'm not going to, actually going to use the actual integral, a inverse times e to the a t minus the identity matrix times b u of k. Okay, we had this. This was using a zero order hold on u of t. And maybe we ought to talk about why that kind of makes sense. U of t is going to be, it's our input to our system, right? And what are we going to be doing? Well, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be taking some continuous system, right? We're going to have A to D converters. Those A to D converters will measure, hopefully, if it were really lucky, it'll measure the states, right? And if it measures the states, then, you know, it's going to give us, you know, the basically the x at kt's, right? It's going to give you those x's, right? And we're going to take those state measurements and we're going to use state feedback, right? We're going to measure each of those states. We're going to multiply each of those states by a number, add them together in the computer, right? And then we're going to run that out to D to A converter, right? and stick that in the input to our system, right? And if we're running something out, a D to A converter, what does the D to A converter do? It does the zero order hold, right? So this is really the thing that makes the most sense. That's why it's the default in C2D, okay? It's just what we're going to do, right? It's exactly what we're going to do. And so this thing right here, you know, even though you could do something more, if you wanted to get a better result of what x of k plus 1 is going to be, you could do that integral up there. You know, there's no approximation. You could get the x of k plus 1 better using that. That would be fine. But really what we're going to do is this bottom thing. And so actually the bottom thing, you know, I think you could get a slight better bite, you know, doing the top approximation, but it's not that much further from what we're really doing. I mean, what we're gonna actually do this thing that's basically on the bottom. And so if you look at this equation right here, this equation can be written like this. X of k plus 1 equals, try this other one here. And I'm going to call this big phi times x of k plus big gamma, and these are like this, big gamma times u of k. And so if you look at this thing, get all these things on here that I need here. If you look at this equation, this looks like x dot equals some new ax plus bu, kind of, right? It's actually similar to that. And so, you know, when we did such things as, you know, we had a thing like this, x dot equals ax plus bu, and we had, that was really, modeled by, you know, in a first order case, it would look like this, right? Here's x dot, and we're summing this thing right here, and we come in here with b, we got u coming in here, and then we have the feedback, you know, on this integrator here. This was the a right here, and then we had, the other thing was y equals cx plus bu. I mean, if you want to do those, x, whatever, you know, so something like this, you know, there's the d right up here. So we had this c right here. And this was y right here. And, you know, if you want to, you could make all these matrices, you know, think of them as matrices, or you could, you know, put a whole bunch of integrators, one for each, you know, of the dimensions of A, you know, and you could make your similar kind of a thing. But now we have this new thing that says x of k plus 1 equals phi x of k plus gamma u of k and y still equals c x of k or y of k equals c x of k plus d u of k, you know, that doesn't change. This guy just, you know, discretize him. And whatever, you know, depending on how many outputs you have, this might be a tilde and that might be a bar, right? You know, if you have a bunch of inputs, then that's the main column vector as well, and I'll just kind of leave it like this. And we can do the same kind of a thing, except there's a difference here. The difference is that block right there gets replaced with something. What does it get replaced with? this integral block gets replaced with something here. What is it? A delay, right? A delay. This is a delay. This is z to the minus 1, a delay by one step. Or one time step, right? And so we've got this thing right here. So this will be x of k. And this is x of k plus 1. Right, so when I delay this by 1, it becomes that, right? And this is a sum, just like before. Got a thing coming in here. This is the gamma. This is the u of k. Now, and it comes in here. This guy comes around. What's this little block here? This phi thing, right? Capital phi. Yeah, whatever. Gamma. Well, I could make all these matrices here if you want. Whatever. Same kind of a deal here. And we got the C, and we sum this, and we have Y here, and we're going to come around. This guy goes into the top with the D. Okay? So the interesting thing about this is because this thing and that thing look so similar, the things we could do up here, we could probably do down here, only this is in the z domain, that was in the s domain, or right? So if we could place the poles in the s domain, we can place the poles now in the z domain. We can find out what poles do you want in the z domain, and we can, well, this thing will have a characteristic equation, just like, or, you know, just like before, just like this guy is a characteristic equation. This guy will have a Z transform with a bunch of poles on it, just like this guy is an S transform with a bunch of poles. You know, so we can do all those kind of things. So let's just take a little bit of time here, and see whether we can come up with some analogous things that we had up here with this thing. You know, we had when we took the Laplace transform of this, we got Y of S equals C. And then SI minus A inverse B plus D times U of S. So this was the H of S, which has poles, right, and zeros. So what we should do is take this dude right here, take the Z transform, see what we come up with, right? And we'll have something analogous to this, right? Which will have poles in the z-plane, right? Does that make sense? So let's see what we get. So the way we got that thing was to transform that thing. So what I'm going to do is Laplace transform this. I mean, z-transform this thing, right? So this says that z times capital X of z, right? That's what that transforms into, right? Equals phi, that's just a constant matrix, so it doesn't do anything. I get capital X of Z. Then plus gamma, capital U of Z, right? Now this is a matrix, so I gotta be careful what I'm doing here. So I'm going to, I can write this thing. I want to bring this guy over to this side. I want to write this guy as Z times I times X of Z minus phi times X of Z equals gamma U of Z, right? All my things in a row here. And then that implies I can factor out the x of z on the right hand side and multiply by the inverse of zi minus phi, right? So I will get x of z equals Okay, it's going to be ZI minus phi inverse. ZI minus phi inverse times gamma u of z. And then if I plug them back into y equals cx plus du, I will get y of z equals c times zi minus phi inverse gamma u of z. Oh, I better put plus d u of z, right? Rather having plus d u of z, so I might as well factor it out. D, and then I put this all in brackets, u of z, and this thing is analogous to that thing, and man, we could probably have just said, look at, since this equation has a, almost, right? I mean, actually, really, we could, right? The only difference was we had to really see that this guy right here, multiplying by z down here is how you Laplace transform x of k plus 1, and multiplying by s here is how you Laplace transform x dot. And once you notice that's the same, then everything else just follows the same, right? So I really could have done that, but, you know, hindsight is always better.
Question.
Yeah. Well, this thing is multiplied by z because that's a z transform of x of k plus 1. Just like on, if I was to do this guy over here, the Laplace transform of x dot is s x of x.
Okay.
And, of course, you know, I'm doing transfer function here, so I'm ignoring initial conditions, right? Just like up here, when I did this transfer function, I put initial conditions to 0. So I probably should make some note that, you know, for transfer function for h of s, assume initial conditions are 0. In other words, that's what we've done up there, too. Right? Transfer function is steady state response. It's not the part due to the u of t, right? I mean, to the initial conditions. That's not the zero input response. So we've got this thing right here, and this thing has poles, right? And furthermore, we're pretty sure, you know, if we can do a block diagram like this, we can do a block diagram like this, right? And if there's a controllable canonical form up here, there's probably a controllable canonical form down here, right? We can get it the same way. We got the controllable canonical form up there, right? So we can do the same kinds of things. I mean, there's actually a bunch more stuff we could do. We actually, you know, one of the things we did up here was we solved this thing, right? I suppose, you know, we could solve this thing down here. This has this is a difference equation right here. Right here, there has a solution, right?
So the thing that we did is we just took that
Yeah, we did that using this, what we did before.
Okay.
This came from the solution of the continuous system. And so if we looked at that solution at k plus 1 capital T, we called that x of k plus 1, then we ended up with this. And, you know, the funny thing about this is you know, looks very similar to that, right? What I'm saying is that we take this thing right here and it becomes this thing down here. Now, why is that important? Suppose this was a plant we were going to control up here, right? well, we're going to feed into it, you know, this U of K. We're going to feed in, you know, this thing right here. And we're going to measure the X of K's right here, right? So when we put A to D and D to A on this plant, we're measuring X right here. In other words, if I put here, this is A to D, right? This is X of K right here, right? And if I put, you know, A to D on here, this is Y of K. And if I put A to D on here, this is U of K right here. And if I put D to A here, this comes in with the U of K, you know, coming in, right? I mean, maybe I should say this is like U of K plus one or something, you know. I mean, I take and I read these guys right here, and this is kind of going to be the next K I put it in, you know. I take this guy, this guy, that guy right there, and I put it into this thing right down here, right? I compute what I need to compute out here, which are the next X's, you know. I compute the next X's, and then I know what I need to put in over here, my U of K, to set the poles of this thing to some new place.
Because you have the A to D converter coming off the input, you get U of K, and then you have the D to A converter.
Right, I really don't have to put an A to D converter here because I know what it was if I'm using it down here, right?
Well, would there really be a delay there? U of K plus 1 to U of K.
Maybe I shouldn't, you know, put that in. I should just put it like this, because what I'm going to do is I'm going to put in, you know, this U of K plus 1, and so I'm really probably not looking. I'm not going to A to D convert what I just sent out because I already know it, you know. But the idea is that this is the input I'm measuring. Really what I'm going to do is only measure out here, okay? Because actually I can only really measure Y. I can't get in here and go to this point here normally, right? Only if this C was the identity matrix and D was zero or something, then I could actually get there, right? But what I'm saying is if I could get in there and did an A to D conversion, that would be X of K, right? And what I'm going to pretend today when we do our example is I'm going to pretend that I could get in there and just, you know, I'm assuming like the C was the identity matrix and the D was zero or something, so my outputs were really my state variables, which is really what I'd actually really like, right? But I'm just going to pretend we have that beautiful situation, and we'll do that for our example. But then what we're really going to do in the real world is we're actually going to take Y over here, and it may measure some of the X's, but not all of them, right? I mean, it's going to measure a few of them, but not all of them. And so then we'll have to use a reduced order observer to, you know, simulate the other ones, or a full order observer if you want, simulate everything, and then, you know, use that to make our state feedback, which will then come back in here on the D to A converter to the input. So that's what we're going to do. And I think maybe the best way to do this pole placement, you know, basically the idea is we're going to grab in here and we're going to put another thing back around in here, which will eventually, you know, end up right there, right? You know, if I assume the D matrix was, you know, I mean, it was just picking one of these U's here. I mean, well, I don't know. What would I assume here? If I assume this was you know, in controllable canonical form, then I could just, you know, put these things back around. Basically, what I'm doing is I'm trying to, you know, put another A matrix on here so that I can change that A matrix to make the poles whatever I want. And you don't have to do this with that Ackermann formula. You know what you can do is you could actually put whatever feedback you want here, whatever A you want there, and actually add it with this A, and then look at what the characteristic equation is. And with your A, you have a bunch of variable coefficients in it, right, that you can then set to set the poles or the characteristic equation to be what you want it to be. You know, you can do that. That's kind of, you know, brute force, but you don't have to worry about all the intricacies of, you know, the transformations and so on. It actually probably the Ackermann thing is probably easier to see what you're doing, but you can just do anything you want and plug it back in and try and make the coefficients what you want. And if it is controllable, it will actually work. You'll be able to do that. But if it's not, you couldn't with the Ackermann either. I think so, yeah. Mm-hmm. There's some little things you have to worry about, but yeah, when you have multi-input and multi-output, you know, in some cases, in most cases, that gives you more freedom than you would have, or more, it makes it easier than it would have been otherwise. Like, say, for example, if this C had been an identity matrix, had a little squiggle under it, you know, square identity matrix right here, then it would feed out for Y, it would give me all the states, you know, X1, X2, X3, and all of them. Well, wouldn't that be great? I got all the states, right? And now, if there were multi-inputs over here, U, right? Suppose U had the same number of inputs, right? And suppose this B was the identity matrix, you know, a little squiggle under it, you know, N by N identity matrix. Then you could see, oh, shoot, it's just exactly in parallel with that A, and I can just, you know, put in my A, and it'll add directly to that A, and so I can change any of the components, any of the nine numbers or however many numbers there are in A, you know, to be whatever I want, right? And so it's more flexible. Yeah, usually. I mean, there are things that you can't, you know, this is something you normally can't change, but if you could actually just put whatever you wanted, you know, and would add in there, then you could add in anything you want to this A matrix, change that A matrix any way you want, and that determines the whole dynamics of the system, right? You could change the poles any way you want.
So how do you change the poles to control the outputs?
Well, I mean, if this was the identity matrix, the states would just be the outputs, right? And all the outputs are going to have, well, depending on how you do it, but in general, if you have poles at certain locations or eigenvalues at certain places, you're going to have, in each output, you will have a little bit of response of each of those different poles, right? In other words, you know, you have one that decays down really slowly, and that's probably the one that's going to last a long time, and the other ones will all be gone first, and then there's one going down really fast. You'll usually have all of those all in the same, in every output. It's just how much of each one you've got, okay? And I guess, you know, you can actually use eigenvector outputs, you know, which would give you just this one, this output is only this one, right? And this one is only that one, right? If you want to. But if you have multiple outputs, you know, you've got more flexibility than you had with just one output. And it makes things easier, not harder. Well, yeah.
For example, the IQI formula, you actually weight each output, right? Mm-hmm. Would that be a better strategy in general for multi-input, multi-output?
Well, yeah, I mean, when you got multi-input, multi-output, you can do that, or you can weight them all the same, or whatever, you know. Whereas if you only got one input, there is only one way you can weight it, and that's it. I mean, there's only one input, right? You can only, you change that input, you change, you know, you don't have that flexibility.
That's what I'm doing, though, because we are trying to control the translation and the angle, right? So you have to weight each output, even though you only have one input.
Yeah, in other words, you can still use one input to drive it to some specific place, and that's fine, but it's actually harder to do that with just one input than it would be if you had two inputs.
Right.
Yeah, right, you don't have a choice. So what I'm saying is doing the single input, single output in some ways, even though it's simpler to write, it's harder to make your thing work. I mean, so... I don't know. So anyway, what I want to do, I guess, is let's just do a pole placement example, okay? And so I just like to, I think maybe the best thing to do is do an example, and then you'll kind of remember how to do pole placement a little bit. So let's see here the example. Let's suppose we have a plant that has a 1 over s squared is h of s. This is the plant. So this would be like, you know, just have a moment of inertia, pure moment of inertia or something, you know, just two integrators, basically, okay? And this thing is actually unstable because you got poles on the J omega axis, right, at zero, right? Two poles at zero. So that's, you know, it's right on the borderline. It's not a good thing, really. So suppose we want to we want a response. Corresponding to one over s squared plus what is it? Two zeta omega n s plus omega n squared, where omega n, the natural frequency, I'll pick as 10, and zeta equals, I don't know, let's pick 1 over root 2. Okay? If you look at the, let's just look and see what that means in the S-plane. Okay? Just for a quick reminder, in the S-plane, this will say, you know, s squared plus 2 zeta omega n s plus 1 equals 0, you know, and you would put it into the quadratic and you'd say s equals minus 2 minus b, which is minus 2 zeta omega n plus or minus the square root of b squared, which is 2 zeta omega n squared minus 4 AC, A is 1, C is 1, all divided by 2A, which is 2, which gives you minus 2's will cancel out. This 2 will cancel with that 2, and this 4 becomes a 1, right? Yeah, I'm just finding the poles.
Do you have omega n squared on that instead of plus 1?
Yeah, omega n squared. Thank you. Omega n squared, what am I saying? So this is 4 AC, so omega n squared. There we go. So this will be minus 2. The 4's, that 4 and that 2 cancel with this 2. And then the omega n I can factor out everywhere. Right, so I'm going to have minus omega n times zeta plus or minus the square root of zeta squared minus 1. Is that right? which, let's see, if zeta squared is less than 1, right, then this becomes S equals minus omega n times zeta plus or minus j root 1 minus zeta squared, right? Did I do that right? And then I think this looks like this on the S-plane. This is the sigma, and this is the j omega axis, right? And these guys need to be in the left half plane, so they're really going to be two roots, one like this and one like that, right? And those roots are moved further out on a rate, on a circle of omega n. Really, this thing right here, if you look at the, what this thing right here is, the real, if I take the magnitude of this number in the parentheses, this is going to be zeta squared plus the square root of 1 minus zeta squared, so this number has a magnitude of 1, right? Okay, and so the radius here, this radius going out here, that radius is omega n. And you see, this pole will kind of come over here and have a peak going right here on the j omega axis, if you're thinking about it. Now this pole comes up like that, and it makes a little hump there, right? And the same thing at negative frequency down here. And as I change, what is zeta? Well, zeta actually, if you think about this, this thing has a magnitude. If I put this in polar form here or whatever, you know, the real part of this is zeta. That's, you know, this ratio to that ratio, this will be like the square root of 1 minus zeta squared. And this will be zeta here, right? So if I take this angle, which is, say, the real part over the, or I'll do the imaginary part over the real part. I don't know, you want to do this thing right here. If I call that theta, I don't know, do you want to do that or do you want to do this one? I don't know what it is. Call that theta. Theta would be the arctangent of real, let's see, imaginary part. Let's see. Be able to do to get. I want this over that is the arctangent, right? So that's zeta over square root of 1 minus zeta. Oh man, what am I writing? Zeta squared. In other words, you know, zeta over square root of 1 minus zeta squared is the tangent of that angle there, right? And so as you make zeta really small, right here. It's like making the number in the middle here really small. It brings these poles right close to the j omega axis, makes that peaky behavior much more, right? And, you know, people that do control systems in the continuous domain, they have zetas and omega sub n's. They do graphs of, like, the unit step response, you know, for different zetas and omega sub n's, and they get it to be what they want, okay? So let's just, you know, suppose we wanted omega n 10 and the zeta 1 over root 2, okay? But this is where they got that from, this kind of a perspective right here, okay? And so that corresponds to something in the z domain, right? So if we're going to, let's match those, find out where the poles are. You know where the poles are in the s domain, unless we can find those. The poles in the s domain are at... In our case, the poles S equals minus 10 times, let's see, where is it? Minus, I've got omega sub n was 10, zeta was 0.707, so it's going to be minus 7.07 plus or minus j, and then this guy right here, 7.707 is really making this theta is 45 degrees for us, right? Because the square root of 1 minus 1 over square root of 2 is 1/2. 1 minus, you know, 1 minus 1/2 is the, that'll be the square root of, just make this the square root of 2, right? And that guy's, no, wait a minute.
Yeah, and that guy's a square root of 2, so he goes over square root of 2, up square root of 2. So this is 45 degrees, 7.07, okay? So these are where the poles are for the S-plane. Okay, and now we can do the pole zero matching to find out where they are in the Z-plane, and that's where we want to make our poles for this system right up here, okay? So what? How do we get the poles for this in the Z plane? How do we get that? Okay, so Z equals E to the ST, which is E to the 7.07 plus.
Shouldn't that be minus 0.7?
Yes, it should. Minus. Because this is minus here, it's in the next plane.
So minus 7.07 plus or minus J 7.07. That's E to the, and then Z is E to the S, and then T. Well, let's pick a T here. How are we going to pick our T? You know, if you make this omega sub n too big, you know, you really need your T. It needs to relate to that omega sub n, right? So what if I picked, like, if I picked T was 0.1, would that be give me a frequency that's bigger than omega sub n? Okay, if... Yeah, roughly. If T is... I'm just trying to pick a nice T. If T is 0.1, how does that relate to omega sub n? Right, so it's 2 pi f sub n, which would be kind of like 1 over t sub n, right? I mean, I could call this 1 over t sub n, right? T sub n.
So you'd want 100 divided by 2 pi.
And that's omega sub n, and that was 10, right? So that would say the t sub n... The T sub n in this case is 2 pi divided by 10, right? And what's that? That's about 2 pi times 0.1, right? So if I pick this T as 0.1, I'm like 6 times, since not 10 times, but I'm 6 times, okay? So that implies that... And the t over 2 is where it wraps around, right? 1 over 2 t is where it wraps around, right? So I'm about 3 times the cutoff frequency, you know, with my thing, right? So, I don't know, but that's the kind of thing you do. You know, if you actually go with a really small t, then, of course, you have to have a faster computer and all that kind of stuff. So I'm just going to kind of do that. And so we'll just say, you know, 1 over 2 t sub n is equal to, I mean, 1 over 2 t is what I want. 1 over 2 t. 1 over 2 t. I'm just kind of comparing the thing here. I got at least a factor of 3. I'll just leave it like that, I'll just say. Okay, so I think that would... So I put in T here as 0.1, which gives me E to the minus 0.707 plus or minus J 0.707 for the new poles for... poles and Z plane. Okay, so that should be within the unit circle because the E to the minus 0.707 is less than 1, right? This is the magnitude E to the, right? So what does this turn out to be? Have you got that? Or just to put it, what is the Z actually in numbers instead of...
In polar form, it's like,
well, it's in polar form. I guess we got it. What is it?
So the magnitude would be
e to the minus 0.707, whatever that is.
84.9 to the negative 6th.
So. What?
Times the 0.1, right?
Maybe not.
I guess seven. So it's e to the minus 0.707.
So the magnitude, or?
Yeah, what is this e to the point minus 0.707? Is that really 10 to the minus something?
No, maybe multiply the 0.1 by the quantity.
Are you looking for the magnitude or
the magnitude is, I don't know, either way. But yeah, what is the magnitude to say, I guess that.
So
the magnitude is e to the minus 0.707, right?
It should be, yeah.
Which is what, and you're saying that's 10 to the minus. I know it's less than 1, but I didn't think it was 10 to the minus a gigantic number.
That was minus
point.
It's 1 over e to the 0.707.
Yeah.
I guess I could do it here in octave. Come on. Give me, come on, where is octave? Octave, octave, octave. There we go, octave.
I got like 0.37.
Okay, so you get point. That's a reasonable point. Point.
That was for the
3.7.
Plus
J.
It was 0.37 plus J times 0.32.
Okay, that seems reasonable. I don't know. Plus or minus, right?
Yeah, plus or minus.
Is that what you're getting? Try it here, see what I can. EXP of what? Minus 1 divided by SQRT 2, right? Plus J times 1 over SQRT 2.
Oh.
Okay. Can't type SQRT. Yeah, so I agree with you. Is that what you're getting?
Yeah.
Because 1 over square root of 2 is 0.707, right? Okay, so we got our poles over there. So this is where our desired pole location. I say this is desired. Okay, so now what we got to do is we're going to have two integrators. And I'm going to assume that we can get at these places right in between, okay? So I'm going to assume we can measure those guys right there. We've got an input here, one input, here's U, and the B matrix is 1 here, right? And we're going to run these guys into, you know, A to D. We're going to run that into an A to D. See, there was no feedback before, so now we're going to put feedback on. We're going to multiply this by something right here, and this by something. Then we're going to add those together. And the output of that, we're going to run into D to A. And go in there, right? And actually, I suppose there is no need for a sum here because they didn't have one, right? It's just like this, right? That make sense?
Except
And so what we have to do is figure out these two numbers here, right? Does that make sense? That's what we're looking for. So now it's time to, I suppose to figure out what those two numbers needed to be. Now, if we didn't have any A to D converters in here, this would just be an old-fashioned feedback control problem, right? But what the A to D and the D to A do is it basically does this from, it puts those A to D's and turns it into this kind of a gadget, right? And so what I want to do, I mean, I could go back and do it the old-fashioned way, which would be basically the continuous way, just do this thing, you know, call the continuous and then say, oh, well, I'm just, assuming those A to D's are straight through and we'll just run through. That would be one way. But what I'd like to do is I'd like to do it over here in this way of looking at things, okay? Because this is the new way. I'm sure you can all do it the old way, right? Does that make sense? I mean, basically, you just kind of, ignore the A to D and D to A and hope they don't mess you up too much and go for it, right? Does that make sense? I mean, that's kind of what we were doing, right? Okay, so now what we got to do is we got to look at this thing. This has some poles on it, right? So we need to figure out what our phi and our gamma are, so we can do, and our C, right? And I think D is zero in our case, so we don't have D. So we need to figure out C, phi, and gamma, so that we can look at what the poles of this guy are right here, right? Or so we can actually, what we're going to do is we're going to take out of this thing and we're going to feed back in over here, we're kind of feeding out right here and putting right back in there. So, let me just show you here. Oh, we're out of time. Well, next time I'll show you the next step here. Does this make sense, what we're doing?
Yeah, mostly. Yeah.
Okay, so we'll just continue on here. I mean, maybe, it would be a good idea for you guys just to try this and see what, do it with the old methods and see what you come up with. Might help you kind of remember these things. Because what we're going to do is very analogous to it. Yeah. It's just down here in this. It's kind of like just as analogous as this guy is to that guy, as what we're going to do down here is what we would do up there. So if you're a little rusty on what we would do up here, you better go do that. Okay? Or tell me to do it. I mean, we can do it in class if you want. But I don't want to bore you with all the stuff from feedback.